terrible second. So maybe, so one thought in terms of the Tula that we're going to try to talk about a little bit with Elul. So again, you know, the role of Tula is about, we spoke about a little bit yesterday, about establishing a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? He can and does give us whatever it is that we need. But the same way that, you know, the parent doesn't want to simply be the ATM machine for a child, but, you know, every time you need something, you know, knock, and that's the only time that you interact. So that's not a very positive relationship. It does not have, not the MISO, but, you know, in theory, we want to make sure that the relationship is a deeper relationship. And the relationship, once you have a relationship, so then naturally when you love somebody, you want to give. That's Mechtav Eliyahu. I heard Dasa writes in the Kunshus HaChesed, the Shorash of the word Ahava is Hav, right? It's to give. It's to give. The way you actually get somebody to like you is by giving to that person. Not by taking from that person, but giving to the person. The more you give to somebody, you connect to somebody. But without the relationship and you're only giving, at a certain point, it becomes, you know, that the person is using you a bit. So it's about creating a relationship.
So our tefillah is giving?
No. Our tefillah is about a relationship. Our tefillah, that's in general. Just the comparison of our relationships helps for just understanding that a relationship should be more than just giving. That was more of a parenthetical.
You can't really give to Hashem. Because
right. That was the background to why he asked the question. But it's about showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we want to have a relationship with Him. Now, what type of relationship is that? So there are multi-dimensions to every relationship, especially when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Two of those that are going to be prominent in the coming days are Avinu and Malkeinu, right? Av and Melech, which are two very different ways of relating. You know, a king can be kol yachol, can give whatever it is that he wants, but doesn't necessarily want to. An Av wants to, but doesn't, then will do everything in his power to be able to give, but doesn't necessarily have the yicholas, you know, the means that a parent may have in order to give to the child can be limited. What's unique about HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that we can turn to him both as Avinu and Malkeinu. He has it all, he wants to give it, but it's about creating that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the more that we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then sometimes, you know, the Sukkim say at the beginning of Sefer Bereishis that the clouds were basically waiting, filled with water, and it wasn't until there was Adam in the world in order to recognize it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought that shefa, brought that bracha down into this world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to have that relationship with us, and he wants us to have that relationship with him. Yes.
Especially like the next day, Arabians.
Yeah.
So Avinu Malkeinu. So, you know, in Shemun Esrus and stuff, like, a lot of Avinu Keith I taught him. So that's like asking Hashem, like you're saying, listen, I heard the relationship, like, forgive me, Father, right? Avinu. Then, B'chalana Keith Hashanu, that's more of like from a king to like a subject relationship, because it's about, like, Hashem's the only one who can really forgive you. He has the ability to forgive you. So first it's like the Avinu part, and then it's like the Malkeinu part. So I heard something like that from David Aaron.
Very nice. Very, very nice. So we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we develop this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One method to use in order to be able to use the tefillah effectively, so Chazal tells us that the Chassidim HaRishonim, how you show in Sha'achas Kodem HaTefillah, that they would wait for, it says an hour probably doesn't mean an hour, but they would pause before entering davening. Why? Because we know what it's like. You're running from this to the next thing, and then always something else. It's very hard to clear our minds. So Rav Volbi writes in the Ali Shur, in the second volume, where he has a lot of, you know, the practical vaden in terms of developing our avodas Hashem. So he writes that that's a key in terms of making our tefillah different. If we pause before we daven and have a chance to clear our minds, the tefillah will be a different type of tefillah. Most of us don't have the ability at this point to be pausing for an hour before davening. Certainly not to be, you know, if we don't have time to daven for an hour, we certainly don't have time to pause for an hour. He suggests a minute. 1 minute. 1 minute. He says, just 1 minute. He says, for 1 minute before you daven, you walk into shul and just. Revolting. He writes in his, again, the second part of the short, he says to try it, see what effect it has. Simply 1 minute to just sit and think for a second. Okay, I have now half an hour, whatever it is, to talk to this world. And try as best as possible, and we all have a gazillion things going on in our heads, and we have a gazillion things going on in our pockets with ringing and dinging and buzzing and vibrations and whatever else. And there's a way to clear our minds for that period of time. That in and of itself will have an impact on our tefillos. Because again, if we're focused on what we're doing, it's going to be a different type of tefillah. This is something for us to reflect on and something maybe that we can try to put into action during Elul as well. Okay, everybody, back to the Gemara. We got through the first two phases of the Mishnah already. Now we're up to step number three. I was asked this morning, is it really taking me this long to learn a Mishnah? So the answer is yes and no. I mean, I do go through these steps when I learn a Mishnah. After you've done it for longer, it doesn't take as long. But it goes a little bit more quickly. But again, I believe this is the way to learn a Mishnah. When the Mishnayis are there, not just to be read and to remember what it says, but to think about it. And this is the mechanism that we use. Okay, so right now, so we established already what the four of us, Zikin are again, what are the four of us, Zikin?
Bor, Shor, Mava, and our
Hever, H, good. H is easier to say than Hever, especially with the Mava there, right? The Shor, Bor, Mava, Hever, or H. And again, the details of it, Mava we know, Mava was Rav Shmuel. And sure, the details of which we've been assuming are Karen, but we'll have to get to that Ezra Hashem in more detail later. Then we went through that we need to have all of the parshas in the Torah. We can't learn one from the other. Which again, but Tosos pointed out at the end that maybe depending on the order, maybe in the end we actually can learn Bor plus something else. But again, but fundamentally, we need all of them to all these parshas to be here. That brings us to the last statement of the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, "Hatzara shavah shebahen." So, what is now the common denominator between everything that we've seen until now? Shedarkon lahazik. Shedarkon lahazik.
That's how we define Bor.
That's how we define Bor.
Sounds like the way we define Bor.
What does that mean? What?
You said Bor is inherent positive, right?
Right.
And then some Shiddar and Mahadik means it sounds like inherently all these things are damaging.
Right. So I think that's true. Again, the one word difference between this and between Bor, the way Tosos had said it, right, was the Tchila. Good. Right? So you're 100% right. When we put Bor and said that Bor has unique characteristics that from its inception, it's more dangerous than everything else and more likely to cause a hezek, when we stick that together with everything else, so it tones it down a little bit. And now it's just the fact that these are things that normally damage, those are the things that we are concerned about in terms of Avos Hazikin, good. Ushmirasan Alecha, and you are responsible for its to watch it. Ukeshahizik ta hamazik lishalin tashlume nezek metavaris. And when it damages the mazik, who's the mazik? The damager, right? The mazik, the one who is damaged is called the what? The one who is damaged. Nizak. So we have the nizak and the mazik. Mazik is the damager, the nizak is either the damagee or the one who is damaged. So you have to pay the amount of the damage b'meitav ha'aretz, with the good stuff of the land. Okay. Good? So how many conditions exist in terms of the characteristics that are redefined based on the Tzad HaShavah? What do we have here? Now that we have a four, we can write it down. So what do we have? The first thing that told us what the Tzad HaShavah is?
They all cause damage.
Tarka Lahazik, right? They're normal damagers. Okay, what's the next one?
Shmirin Alacha.
Shmirasan Alacha. You have to watch it. Okay? And are there any more?
It's a result of not watching it, you have to pay.
That's true, but in terms of the details of the Tzad HaShavah, is there a third? Chayim to pay?
Oh, we made to the Aret.
Wait, no, is that one thing?
Chayim Shalom.
Good. I want to know how many different factors there are in the Tzad HaShavah here. You guys have told me two so far. What's the third? That you have to pay? Okay. Right? Chayim Shalom and Tashlumi, that's it. Is there a fourth? You tell me.
Not really. I mean, because you don't always have to pay with land. It's only if you want to pay with land.
So how about we put it right here? How about we put it in parentheses? Maybe 3A. Let's put it right here right now, okay? Okay, so we have Dark and Lahazik, Shmiras and Alechan, Chayav, Lashalim, parentheses, B'meitav Ha'aretz. And I think that this question that you guys have raised may be very significant. It's a very important one, which is factor number three one thing, or is it two things? Is it a Chayav, Lashalim? I have to pay, that's a common denominator. Number four is, well, how do I pay B'meitav Ha'aretz? Or is it no? When I pay b'meitav ha'aretz. So again, so the first one, Dark and Lahasik, you have any problems with that one? That one seems very straightforward, right? The Torah lists off different categories of things that damage, and says what the repercussions of the damages are. And it makes sense that the things the Torah lists as things that we have to be concerned about them damaging are things that normally damage, right? So number one seems to be pretty obvious. The second and the third, I think, are a bit more interesting. Right? We spent a while this morning, and now let's go through it together, talking about number two, right? Ushmirasan Elecha. Right, because there are two different, and again, two and three highlight two different dimensions in terms of the repercussions, or in terms of the repercussions or the dimensions of Nezek in the Torah. Right? One factor, right? One is the Chi of Shmira, and the second one is the Tashlumen. Right? And that's really what two and three are, but it's two separate points. Right? There's the obligation to watch, and there's the obligation to pay if damage happens. So we know that Tashlumen is going to be a common denominator between everything that's listed in the Mishnah. Why? Because, how do we know that? What? How do we know that you have to pay in each of these four cases when there's damage?
Rambam lays it down.
Before the Rambam? Before the Chumash. Right? In each of the cases that we read, Avos Tzidken, the Torah said you have to pay. So it's not a finished us, it's not surprising, and it's not surprising that it's in the Mishnah, it's not surprising that it's in the Rambam Paskins. It's the Chumash. The Psukim and Parshas Mishpatim tell us that there is a chiyuv to pay. So that's a common denominator between all of them. These are damages for which you are obligated to pay. But what about the chiyuv shmira? Ushmirasan, shmirasan alacha. Right? Where did this come from?
It's in the psukim.
It's not pasuk.
Show me the pasuk.
It's not pasuk.
He showed it to me this morning. Let's read the pasuk that Aaron is pointing out. He is correct.
I thought we said there's no real pasuk that says you can't damage.
I'm not asking if you can or can't. I'm asking if you're obligated to watch. It sounds like a small difference, but there's big repercussions to that difference. I want to know, am I obligated to watch? I have a bull. The Torah tells me the whole story, what happens if my bull gores my neighbor. But it doesn't tell me, and am I responsible to make sure that my ox does not gore my neighbor? Do I have to watch? So the Mishnah says yes.
So there wasn't
Why
a
does it say yes?
Why does the Mishnah say yes?
It doesn't say yes, it just says you have to.
The Mishnah says yes to the question of am I obligated to watch? Again, everything else in the Mishnah is Doraisa. Right. So if it's not Doraisa, it would be a strain that that's the Tzad HaShava. So if we're stuck, we could maybe try to wiggle our way out by saying it's not Doraisa. But the simple reading of the Mishnah is that it is Doraisa. Okay? We agree? I think so, right? We're talking about Tzad HaShava within the Pesukim. So, right, how does the Mishnah, so again, I think it's clear that the Mishnah says it. So the Pesukim say, yes, Saran, what did the Pesukim say? Okay.
So I'll be the one now. Oh, here's the Pesukim. So, even short, not enough, blue, I'll be bullish, or the Shoshon.
So, okay, now we're talking about a case of what we call a Shor Hamuad. So we'll talk about it more different time, but a Shor that's already shown that it has a tendency to gore. Good. So what does the pasuk say? That's a literal translation. If you have a person who has a shor that has a tendency to gore because it's done it already. So we know that it's going, or that it's likely that it's going to gore. V'huad b'valav, and you warn him. And so he knows that he has a shor that potentially could damage. V'lo yishmerenu, and he does not watch it. Then he gets the punishment the Torah says. Does that pasuk say that you are obligated to watch it? Ushmi rasan alach. Is there a chiyuv? These were chiyuv shmirah. Chiyuv.
It does not say. Does it? It's just a consequence for not watching.
Correct.
The lack of watching is a
correct.
Problem, so therefore, you have to watch it.
That's an interesting therefore. It doesn't say it in the pasuk. I'm not disagreeing with that. That might be true. That's not what the pasuk says, right? The pasuk simply says you're right that it talks about shmirah in the pasuk 100%. And that pasuk is telling us that there are ramifications to not watching it. But does that mean that you are obligated to watch it? It's not clear. The Mishnah, though, is saying that you do have an obligation to watch it. So now, let's just take, we'll answer this question, but let's take a step back beforehand. What would be the din? We saw this this morning, right? What about causing damage on purpose if I am prepared and willing to pay? Right? I told you this morning, I walk up to your car with a baseball bat and a wad of cash. And I pummel your windshield and shatter it. And then I give you all of the money that you need. And I'll even, as I said, I'll hire the guy to come to your driveway to clean out the glass from your car. And to put the new windshield in, and they'll do it when you're on vacation, so you won't miss out on losing your car. Maybe the psychological anguish that some people were concerned about won't even be there. We'll take care of it. Am I permitted to do that or not? Am I permitted? Right? Is it mutter lahazik ulashale? Am I permitted to damage you if I am going to pay for it? So we saw
Rambam says no.
Right? The Rambam in Hilchos Nizkei Mamon Perkei Alef Aleph says it is aser. Says it's aser. So much so, we saw that he says that if you're sure goes into somebody else's property and he warns you to get it out and you just ignore him, he's allowed to sheft your cow, gives it to you afterwards because it's doesn't belong to him either, but he's allowed to do whatever is necessary, even to damage your shor, to protect his assets. Right?
Okay.
How does the Rambam know that it's awesome? What? Well, where does it say that in our Mishnah?
He fills in the
blank. What?
He fills in the blank.
He fills in the blank. Where is there a blank that needs to be filled in?
I would guess at the end, after it says, if the damage you have to pay, then it would be because you are chayiv.
You're chayiv to...
Before that, you just say you're chayiv to wash it, and if not, you are chayiv.
Do you want to suggest that it comes from the chiyuv shmira? Yes. Okay, good. We'll get back to that. Let's try to go a bit more street. We'll get back to that. No. It's not convoluted. Actually, I think it might be the most logical, but I think it will help us to go in a different course. No, you're good.
Yeah.
I'd say it's two parts. I'd say, first of all, the fact that if you do damage, you're chayv to pay, and we know that you're chayv to make sure that there isn't damage, so obviously it isn't this or two.
Right. Similar to what Eitan's saying also. Right? The fact that the Mishnah says, and which means the Torah says, there's a chiyuv shmira, why, and then there are consequences to not being shomer, the Torah wouldn't say that if it was permitted to do. It's a logic, it's a svara. Before we get to that svara, and we'll see that svara soon, there are numerous shitos in Rishonim to explain what this iser is. What this iser is, before we get to the explanation that you guys are giving. I think I said to one of you, if you're going to tell me that it's us, so you need to plug it into a pasuk. So we have 613 mitzvos. I said, identify, because the pasuk doesn't say it by a zikin, what pasuk do you want it to fit into? I'll share with you two approaches in the Rishonim. There are more. Two approaches in the Rishonim to understand what this iser is. Because the Rambam is not alone in assuming that it's us. The Rishonim seem to across the board assume that it's also. The question is, what iser is it? Rabbi Yonah in Pirkei Avos says, you know what iser is? Iser is stealing. Stealing. Hare kasu lo sigzol v'chol hanizakin. Bechlal also halav. How is it stealing? Is it a baby or not?
Oh.
Yeah.
I think because the time before it's fixed, the owner is losing out on it.
Right. I'm taking away your usage. I am damaging your apples. Now you can no longer use them. I'll make you whole again by paying. But for that period of time, for me damaging that object, he says it's included in close sigzo. Interesting, huh?
Like that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be included in the payment? Isn't it, if you injure someone, you also pay for the time, the amount of money, wouldn't it be?
There are sometimes other types of payments that need to be made. That's part of the calculation of...
Also, they only get money for the value if they were watching cucumbers or something, whatever it's called. Kishun?
Kishun. Okay, yeah, the details of how to pay, I don't think are relevant to understanding this. They'll be important later. That's usually when you damage a person, not when you're damaging the object. When you're damaging a person... So then there's Nezek Tzar, Yibushevet Boshes. So there are multiple payments that need to be paid. But again, I go over and I bash in the windshield of your car. I've used your object, and A, I'm using your object in a way that you didn't want it to be used for that moment of me bashing it. B, is I've taken away your usage of it afterwards until it's fixed. Says Rabbi Yonah lo sigzo. The Yarama. Yeah.
I challenge that though. Yeah. What if I
broke someone's car, but I gave him a brand new one right after.
So what if I stole? What if I stole your car and then gave you a better car back? Did I do anything wrong?
Oh, it's still stealing, but you wouldn't get Makos, maybe?
Okay, we can talk about the payment afterwards. Maybe I'm not obligated to touch Fume Nezik afterwards, but it's still stealing.
Still stealing.
And it's true by stealing also, right? By stealing also, it's explicit that stealing something, even when you're planning to give it back afterwards, is still awesome. Nafkamina.
You mean like borrowing somebody that permission?
Not the common case you talk about is like, you know, a teacher taking away a child's watch, phone, whatever it is. Again, depending on how it's set up, if those are the rules of the class.
Could have pulled that card in high school. Oh, it's stealing.
It could be that if those are the rules and you agree to go into the class, you're agreeing to abide by those rules. So again, it's not so simple, but again, that type of situation. Or it could be, let's say, you know, your friend goes, your chavrusa leaves to get a cup of coffee, and when he disappears for a half an hour. So you figure, you know, he's been out long enough, so you want to cause him a little bit of, play with him a little bit. So somehow he managed to leave for half an hour and he did not take his phone with him. It's already a kasha, but assuming that, you know, he left his phone behind. So you take his phone, and he comes back, he's like, wait, where's my phone? Because you're not planning on stealing it. Parsha says that's Nisa Deraisa.
Whoa, really?
You stole, you took something that doesn't belong to you, I'm not taking it back.
So crazy.
I'm not the hapsu.
You feel like a prank on your friend or something?
I think the pashtus is, you can't take something that belongs
what
to
him. What if you know he would let you use his phone in general? Like,
so that's the credit. I mean, you have a shoal shlomidas. Usually you're not allowed to, usually a shoal shlomidas is a gazlan. Borrowing something without permission is a gazlan. So we assume that when it comes to objects of a mitzvah that don't disappear, like tefillin or something like that, that most people, talis, those people are not makbid on it because they're happy that you did a mitzvah. So could you potentially have such a situation? You could. If you know the person well enough, maybe you have such a situation in which there's an implied...
That's very interesting.
Good. So that's Rabbeinu Yonah's opinion. The Yad Ramah in Baba Basra, and I just chose these two because they're coming from opposite perspectives, he said, I'll give you a very easy one. I'll give you a mitzvah's essay. Not a los essay. Not an iser. I'll give you a mitzvah's assay, a positive commandment that you are violating when you go over and you bash your friend's car. What happened? God.
But what if by smashing a smartphone you're doing him a favor?
And if you burn a shape of from the other same time, you burn what?
They're used in Hazara,
This is the Yad Ramah on the Rishonim. And Baba Basra, he says that it is a violation of Yahatul Reza Kamofa. Would you want somebody coming over and bashing your windshield in, even if they were going to pay it back?
No.
Presumably not. So again, these are at least two opinions. We could probably. We went through it, probably six or seven others as well. Two as an example of the isser or the reason. Yeah, one's not an isser in the lav sense, but why is it forbidden lahazik even amenas the shali?
We didn't establish where we get mirasan in isser.
Very good, very good. Do either of these reasons tell me that I have an obligation to watch it? These two reasons over here, right? They've explained the Rambam, but
these are why you can't let it go, but not why you want.
These are why I can't damage. I can't damage even if I'm planning on paying you back, which is the case the Rambam was talking about, which is an important factor. Do these automatically tell me that I have a chiyuv shmira? No.
No, but it doesn't svara. Because if you can't damage, then what do you have to do? You have to make sure you don't damage. Making sure you don't damage is safeguarding.
And therefore,
correct. Good. Meaning, it could be that part of losigzol and part of yahavlerecha kamocha is to do whatever is in my power to make sure that they don't happen. Right? My obligation in terms of making sure that I don't steal is usually it's that keep my hands to myself. When I know that the stealing is going to be done by my ox, maybe I have a chiyuv to make sure that my ox is guarded also.
Is it like an ase versus a los ase? Like, don't steal, but you have to proactively prevent yourself from stealing.
I don't know if it becomes a positive commandment or if it's a sniff of los ase. Again, I'm not quite sure how to say that. But the Mishnah is saying, if you understood this way, the Mishnah is saying that part of those things, or part of it, I'll never come up. If I don't want you damaging, I also want you, and it's sort of the consensus in society that people should be watching.
Then
it may be that you fulfill something actually by watching. And if you hold this low sigzol, then you're just avoiding not being over in Israel. So that would be a nafkamina and svara between Abed Yona and between the Yadamah. But again, just make sure the point is clear, neither of these directly imply a fee of shmira. Once we know that there's an Isser, and we know that there's a fee of shmira because the Mishnah told it us, it could be that's where the Mishnah was getting it from. The Mishnah understood that if there is an Isser, not just a fee of to pay, right? If it was only number three, Chayav Yishalem, then maybe not. But once there's an Isser, then I'm also obligated to make sure that I don't do anything to violate the Isser Chiyuv of Shmira.
Is that like a rule by all
Isser? Not necessarily. Oh. The Birka Shmuel from Baruch Ber, the great Talmud of Reb Chaim. Number one Talmud, Baruch Ber, the Birka Shmuel, has one answer for both of the questions that we're talking about, the Chiyuv Shmira and the Isser. What's his answer? What you guys have been saying. From the fact that the Torah says that if the damage occurs, you are required to pay, it must be it's usur, and it must be that you're obligated to watch. I don't need to tell you those things. I don't need to tell you about the Mechamakabon, but what Eitan was saying, what Timosh was saying before. It's just the Svara. The Torah says you have to pay. The Torah, by saying you have to pay, is basically saying this is a bad thing. Avoid it. And maybe you can throw in what Aaron's saying also. It's clear from the story below Yishmerenu that what you need to do in order to avoid the Shmira, you're not doing it. That's both where the Isser and the Chiyuv Shmira comes from. So that's why I told you to hold off, because I think it just becomes clear that we broke down. Again, the question was, to summarize what we said, the question was the Mishnah says Shmira Sanalafa. And that's not the same thing as the Teshuvah. The question is, where does the Chiyuv Shmira come from? So we took a step back and said, well, let's say I go the full opposite direction. Not just that I'm not watching, but I'm actively going to damage you. I'm going to damage your property. Maybe a person is worse, but I'm going to damage your property. But I'm willing to pay. Is that mutter or not? So we said it's usur. So the Rambam and everything seems to agree. That does not necessarily, we asked, where does that come from? And we gave two options, right? Lo sigzo, v'hafta l'recha kamocha. Two of the options. But that in and of itself did not yet tell us there was a chiyuv shmira. So we said, you have to say a little bit of a chiddush. You have to say that, no, part of lo sigzo, and part of v'hafta l'recha kamocha, whatever it is, part of the isser is that I have to avoid the isser as well. Chiyuv shmira. What Rav Baruch Ber says in the name of Reb Chaim, he's quoting, he says it over the name of Reb Chaim, so can attribute it to Reb Chaim. What Reb Chaim said was that no, you don't have to get involved in any other parsha. Stick to Parshas Mishpatim. Everything you need for now, it's all in Parshas Mishpatim. What does it say there? It says that if your animal, you are responsible for damages, you have to pay. How could it be that the Torah would tell you you have to pay, but let you go ahead and damage and then pay, or let you go ahead and answer? It doesn't make sense. It's a svara. Exactly what you guys are saying. That's the approach of other kind. Good?
Meaning that proves that you have to, that's enough, it's an isser to...
It answers both questions. it would say that's Asr Lahazik Lashalin. Because the Torah is saying that you have to pay. And it's going to say you also have to do both parts. Both of them, right, he's killing two birds with one stone. Which is really what they did also, but we had to extend them in order to do that. But Reb Chaim says it's one svara coming out of the parsha of the Zikin itself. And if the Torah says I have to pay, then it must be it's usur, and it must be I'm obligated to watch. Good?
Yeah?
Again, or we're good?
Good.
Okay. Once we're in the beautiful world of the Lumdus here, let's have one more chakira for old time's sake. Because that's what everybody in Yeshiva is going to be tumulting about, so you will be familiar with it, but we're not going to do it at depth. Rabbi Berman mentioned one permutation of it in the Shir Psicha, but we're just going to go, this is more parenthetical, it's important to be aware of. Maybe as we go through the other sigmas and we see how the Lumdus, again, what we said now with this Reb Chaim was tremendous Lumdus. What I wanted to show you guys is the Lumdus came out of the Mishnah. You needed the Lumdus to learn from the Mishnah, because if you learn Shmiras and Halacha, you're like, well, what on earth is the Mishnah talking about? So without explaining some of this, the Chiyuv Shmira, you can't understand Pshat of the Mishnah. That's not Lumdus for the sake of Lumdus. This is Lumdus which is Pshat. You need this. Great. So the Chakir is like this. Says Rav Shimon Shkop has it and others as well. But the basic question is right, what's the nature of the obligation to pay for Netzach? The Torah says that you have to pay. So we're not questioning that you have to pay. Right? But what's the nature of the Tashkumen? When I have to pay, why is it that I have to pay? I mean, what's the mechanics that the Torah is using? Not Darshim and Taim and Dekra. We're not going to figure out what Hashem is saying. But how is it working? And there are at least two options, but two basic options. One, and then we'll like to see why it relates closely to what we said, which is why I'm bringing it up here. The first option is because I was negligent in my Chiyuv Shmira. I was a poshaya. If I'm obligated to watch to make sure that you are not going to be damaged, and I didn't do what I'm supposed to be doing, the Torah says you're obligated to pay for your shia. Okay? So one approach is
onesh.
What?
Like an onesh?
Well, that's an onesh. The way the question is when the Torah said it, when the Torah said it, what was the, you know, maybe let me say both sides, then maybe it'll be clearer, and then we'll discuss it. So one possibility is that the reason that I have to pay is because I was negligent in my shmira, right? Pasha Mishmira. I was negligent in watching it, and I didn't watch it. The Torah said I had to watch it. So now I have to pay because I didn't watch it. The second possibility, is the reason that I have to pay is because I am responsibility for not just for what I do, but I am responsible for what my money does, my mamon does. Right? Because mamon chahizit. It's, I guess, more of a penalty, right? Again, the penalty might be not the right word, but again, why is it that I have to pay? Do I have to pay because I should have been watching it, and I didn't watch it, and now that it damaged, I was negligent in my shmira, so I have to pay for my negligence? Or is it that my acts, I'm responsible not just for what I do, I'm responsible for what my ox does. I'm responsible for what my money does.
And then it becomes like it's him doing it. And that's why
it's like him doing it. So then why... Good. That's the question. What's a nafka mina? There are many. But one nafka, yes?
I feel like they're both one and the same thing. Because one will lead to the other.
So let me tell you the nafka mina is the same thing. That is nafka mina. We'll help bring out the distinction, and then we'll discuss it.
You know, nafka mina? It would probably be if you're not being negligent, but it still damages someone.
Right.
If you're not
if you're watching it properly, but it still damages someone. So there's
good.
No pashaya.
But there's
still
someone. And all of a sudden
right.
It goes in and just like
right. So the answer is going to be that that's theoretically a nafka mina. It's not a practical nafka mina. We'll explain why in a second.
It's not chayav.
Because you're not going to be chayav according to anybody. Why are you not chayav? If I was shomer properly and my bull did do damage, and I believe the reason is because of Mamon Bezek, why would I not be obligated to pay? What?
You did all
that
you could.
You know, you're an onus. Onus Rachmana Patre. So it's for a different reason. So you, but you're right. I mean, you're thinking along the right line. That is an opportunity to do.
The opposite case, if you were completely poshea, but it doesn't do anything.
But then there's nothing to pay. That would also be true in theory. A nafkamina would be the following case. What if I was Hosea? Again, I'm not going to tell you what the halach is in such a case. I really don't want to get bogged down by it, but I want to make sure that the question is at least clear. What if I was Hosea, and now my ox, I was Hosea and my Shmira, so I didn't lock the door. Now my ox is running down Amsterdam Avenue. And as it's running, you know what I, as it starts running, before it damages, you know what I say? Chaval, I lost my ox. Whoever wants it can have it.
Hefker.
I'm going to be mafkir my ox before the damage. So pasha.
That's a crazy.
But then I hefker, and then
I love it.
Easy.
Yes.
So
no longer yours.
This is the case. Wait, Don, you're on now. You're on now. Listen, this is the case, and I want you to apply it. Ready? I don't lock the door. I have my ox way down there on 181st Street in my corral. And it's gearing up. It's getting angry. And I leave the door wide open. Am I negligent? 100%. Starts bolting down Amsterdam Avenue towards Yeshiva University. And I'm like, you know what? I don't feel like running after it. I'm after it. It's completely ownerless. I don't know if it's going to damage or not. Right? Whoever gets the ox, if somebody can, stun gun it and bring it home with him, it's his. I don't want it back. I'm not interested anymore. What does happen in the end is that the ox does damage somebody. Am I the owner obligated to pay for that damage or not?
Yes.
1 second.
Oh.
You're saying yes. Why?
Because of the little minute thing that you said. I don't like the case. Because like you can't just be like, oh, like you're just on the cow, no one knows what I'm thinking right now.
No, I announce it. I'm loudspeaker.
Right,
the entire Washington. You know that annoying beep that goes on during the fire? You guys been here for a fire drill yet?
Yeah.
But during the fire drill in the base medrash, I announce, if anybody sees the ox,
so
take it. It's yours.
So here we go. This is what's going on. You can't do that.
Yeah.
When do it while he's in the car and the door is shut and locked. But you can't do it when he's free.
Dude, 1 second. Listen. Here's my question. Listening?
Yeah.
If you went ahead and caught my ox, are you allowed to take it home with you? Yes or no?
In that case, yes.
Where are you?
Actually, no.
If it's to your benefit that you're going to be able to get my ox, so then my hefker was good. But if it damages and I'm going to be the one who's liable,
you
can't have it both ways.
No, because.
Okay, well, the halacha is that.
How can you hefker your cow like that in a dangerous situation? It doesn't make any sense. The Torah, how does the Torah allow something like that? Does it make any sense?
Again, I'm not telling you what the halacha is. Practical case. I want you to understand the theoretical construct here. Okay? Let's assume that the hefker works. And how do I know the hefker works? I know, not because of the case of damage, but because if you were able to stun gun my axe, you would be able to take it home with you. You would have yourself a brand new 2018 axe. Okay? They're hard to come by. It's yours. Okay? So now, we see that once at this point over here, when hit here, it no longer belongs to me. Now what you're bothered by is, but I was Poshea. Isn't that my responsibility? I can't get out of the responsibility that I have simply by saying that it's ownerless. Even if it's ownerless, and I agree it's ownerless, even if it's ownerless, I was still negligent. I should be responsible for that, right? That's what you're saying. Good. That's this approach. According to you, assume that the reason that you have to pay when damage occurs is because you were negligent in allowing the damage to happen. That's the first case. Pasha Bishmira. According to this way of understanding, once I was negligent over here, it does not matter what happens over here. Because the reason that I'm obligated to pay is because I caused a damage. Not because my money damaged, but because I caused the damage. The second way of understanding is that the way, was it a nice thing to do? No. Am I going to have to ask for kapara and Yom Kippurim? Probably. But is it my money that is mine at this moment that is my responsibility to pay? The answer is that it's not. Does that get us out of it? That depends. If you believe that the reason that the Torah, the mechanics by which the Torah said you have to pay for damages is because it is your money that did it, you're responsible for the damage caused by your money, then the second one would say, well, this case, I'm sorry, you got out on a technicality. Is it nice? No. You beat the system. That's what you're saying. It's not nice. You beat the system? You're right. But again, I'm bringing this case up not for practical reasons, but that's the difference between these two. You hear the difference? If the reason that you have to pay...
One is the negligence, and one is the... I mean, the thing is...
Because my money damaged. And my money's like... Call it... Let's say this way.
If you're something, it's not your money anymore.
Exactly. So this para, the shore, is not mine anymore. So now it's not my para that damaged, but it's my fault that the damage occurred. So which is the reason that the Torah says you're chayav? Well, you're deciding. I'm saying both are options. These are two ways of understanding it. And as we go through different sugyos, we'll see which proofs we can have in both directions. But are these two legitimate ways of understanding? They are. You can have a personal preference.
Similarly, see the Nafkamina.
You don't see the Nafkamina? Which part do we see? Again, if it's Pasha Bishmira,
right.
Then we're looking at the negligence that led to the damage. We're not looking at a question of who's it was.
Just the fact that you said, okay, forget
it. Should I give you a different Nafkamina out here? I'll give you another Nafkamina in theory. But it's going to confuse you, so I'm not going to do that. Let's not do that. Yeah, it's going to confuse things more. So I'm going to take that back. Again, these are two different ways to understand. I'm just trying to highlight what the difference is between the two. If it needed to be my money, then as long as it's not my money when it damages. The proof that it's not my money when it damages is because if you catch it, you got it? I think you got it too. You'll think about it a little bit more later. But I think you got it. Again, it's a huge, huge topic. File it away, because as we go through different sukkahs, it's going to be important for us to keep it in mind. I don't want to give, we had a shirt pulling on it at the beginning. We could have more from Rabbi Berman. We could have other shirt pullings on it also. It's that big a topic. But it's important to be familiar with it. And I want to make sure that if you just heard it there, it may not have been clear. It's an important question to keep on the back burner, because it may come up in terms of helping us understand other sukkahs. Yes. Morally not good.
No, I don't want to say that. It's just something.
You can say that.
Something doesn't seem right. It's like I could throw a knife up in the air and be like, it's hefker, and then I'll like kill someone. Like,
oh, that might be different, because you might be responsible once you put it in play.
If it's a short column and it starts walking out, you're like, okay, whatever, I'm chasing it. It might not start out as
correct. Maybe my description of it being angry at the beginning confused you.
Yeah, it might not even.
No, it is negligence. But it may not have been a negligence that that's, you know, 80% likely to cause damage. Maybe it's a negligence that's 20% likely to cause damage. Here's a better way. He's right. Right. I was trying to add drama to it, but you don't need the drama.
I know it doesn't care about emotions.
Again, I'm not saying that even if this halacha was true, I'm not saying that we're going to give you a, you know, maftir yon or psicha ne'ila if you're doing this. All I'm just trying to figure out is, technically, I'm trying to understand the contract. It could be that, well, the rabban will say you're chayav to pay anyway because you're a nubnik and you're causing trouble. But I just want to make sure that the construct is clear. That we're good on? Okay. Let's try to get through this, the Meitav issue. I don't think we're going to get into the Gemara, but let's finish up the Mishnah. Okay. So again, now the question that we're left with, so again, this I think is all good. We got a lot done over here. The question now is number 3. Right? Chayiv l'shalem, the Mishnah, and the Meitav ha'aretz. Is that one thing, or is that two things? So let's see. What does Rashi tell us? So you guys read this Rashi beautifully during Seder. B'meitav ha'aretz, says Rashi, may idis nechasa yigve de mehezeko imrotza lefroa lo karka. So the first thing Rashi says is idis. Idis is the concept that we need to know. There are 3 levels of karka, 3 levels of land. The best is idis, the middle is beinonis, and the worst is ziboris. There will be times that the Gemara will do it objectively, and there will be times that it is the day. It's your best land, even though on the market, maybe it's only middle land. So you don't always know which one it's referring to, but these are the 3 levels. Idis, Beinonis, and Ziboris. So says Rashi, when the Mishnah tells us, based on the Psukim, right, then the Meitav Aretz comes out of a Pasuk. The Mishnah did not make up that term. That term is in the Pesukim. So Meitav, when you're paying the Meitav, you are paying Idis. Then as you guys pointed out this morning, Rashi could have stopped after the word Hezeko. Right? The words Imrotza Lefroa Lo Karka, if he wants to pay Karka, seems superfluous. What is Rashi adding? Any time... Again, I know we've said this already, but we're going to keep repeating it. Anytime you could stop Rashi in the middle and everything makes sense and there's nothing added by the end, we need to work extra hard to figure out what is Rashi adding with those last few words. So what is Rashi adding when if he wants to pay using land?
Yeah, so my suggestion is, maybe it's not really accurate, but I think... Why did Rashi stop use nifsav? Like, that means like possessions?
It does, but in this case I think it's clear it means land.
Right, no, so my take was that maybe because he's trying to show you that really it could be your possessions meaning land, it could be your money. And then if you want to give him land, so then you can give him land. So he's like presenting the choice at the end.
But then, so I think you're right, he is presenting the choice at the end.
The question is why, but then he said the me'ezeko, which means the value. Right. From your possessions.
I think he's just trying to say with the chassid that it's the best land that he has.
Okay.
I think that's what he's trying to say with that. Aaron, do you want to say something?
No.
Say the same thing? You know what I think was bothering Rashi? I think what was bothering Rashi was exactly what you guys were hesitating about at the very beginning of this year today. Is number 3 one thing or is it 2 things? The last line of the Mishnah says that the last Sada Shavashem is Chayav L'Shalem, right? Chav Mazik L'Shalem Tashlum Nezek V'Dorot. Is L'Shalem Tashlum Nezek one point and B'Meitav Ha'aretz another point? Or is it one big clause?
Or is Rashi trying to put B'Meitav Ha'aretz in parentheses?
Yeah.
That's exactly what he's doing. Rashi is giving us... Exactly. Well, Rashi is explaining to us that Rashi thinks... Then Meitav Ha'aretz is 3b.
So
meaning
right. So by that, is he saying that's preferable?
That's a good question. We'll get there in a second. Let's make this point is clear. You understand what I'm saying? So again, one issue we could read this as that the Rokamatamir came off there is that you have to pay. There's another one is that when you're paying land, you have to pay the best land. That's one way of reading it. The other way is that you have to pay with the best land. as one clause. Rashi seems to have been bothered by the fact that we probably are not going to be sure which one it means. Therefore, Rashi says, when do you have to pay with the best land? Im rotze lifroa lo karka. If you want to pay land. Do you have to pay land? Says Rashi, no. So Rashi is reading it as a 3a and 3b as opposed to as a subset. Right? Beit Tahar is now a subset of Chai Bishalim.
He could have just said much easier. Why don't Rashi just say it's the best land if you want to give him?
If you want to give land, is that what he says?
No, but why do you have to give all these words? That
That's the word. What, which word is extra?
Imrotzele for a low.
Karka. If he wants to pay
him
his land.
Karka or something like that. I don't know.
What?
I don't know. I just think it's more.
Isn't it? The makeup is referring to.
It's a little bit more wordy, yeah. Like you could just say the last phrase and add the word like idis inside, no? Like idis hop. Idis.
So I think he's saying if you're paying, if you want to make the payment using land, then you have to do it with idis. But you have to pay with land. Rashi's saying you don't. Rashi's saying
Or you could have said or pay with your money. But okay, fine.
But that's the same. I mean, what do they say? Six in one, half a dozen in the other. Right? It's just two different ways of saying the same thing. Oh. When you're using other things besides land, does it have to be made of? We don't know. Right? Maybe not. Right? The only time we know there's a din of metav is with land. If it's not going to be with land, then maybe you don't even have to pay. Maybe you don't even have to pay the best. And I think that's the fact of halacha. I think the Rashi's and Chumash being pointed out that once you're paying other things, you don't have to pay. You do not have to pay the best. Who gets to choose? Meaning, is the choice of the Nisa, or is one preferable? Is one preferable? Maybe. Again, from Sukkot, I don't think you see any difference, but again, theoretically, it's a potential question we could ask, right? Is there going to be any difference? So, from Rashi, what does it sound like? Who gets to choose?
The Mazik.
The Mazik, right? The damage they choose. Is there any preference? I don't know. Do you see anything in Rashi? Tells you the preference one or the other?
What was that?
Hmm?
If there's like one is better to it.
Right. Should he choose on it? It doesn't sound like it. It sounds like it's up to him.
If he uses that last one, shouldn't that be considered?
Not if you hold that as 3B.
Especially if you hold it as 3B.
If you hold that it's separate, then it's just talking all up about land.
Right, then you have to pay with land.
No. 3A is you have to pay.
Right.
I can pay whatever I want.
No, I'm saying
3B is if I'm paying with land, I have to use the best land.
Oh.
If you're reading it as 3 and 3, if you're reading it as 3, then it's I have to pay with the best land. Then it sounds like that's the preference is to pay with the best land. If it's 3, I have to pay. Okay.
Then it's either you have to pay with the best land or you have to pay with the best land is preferable.
You could have went that, but you definitely don't have to, because if 3 is Chayav Mishalim, that would be enough. Lahalacha, it's actually a machlokas in the Nosekelim and Shulchan Aruch, whether if you have money, does money come first or not? You know, cash is king, as they say.
Right.
So does money come before anything else, or can they, even if you have the money, you could choose to do it in a different way. I'll leave you guys with one last thought. Once we've established that the mazik is the damager, the mazik is the damager, and the nizak is the one who is damaged, wouldn't it have made more sense for the Mishnah to say arba avos mazikim, or not arba avos nizikim? There are four types of damages, right? There are things that are doing the damage. What? Thanks. So the Rishonim grappled a little bit. The answers are not. Yeah.
What's the difference again?
The Mazik is a damager.
Also,
the Nizak is the damagee, the one who's damaged. So if I'm telling you there are four types of damages, what are four types of Mazikim?
It sounds like there are four types of ways that you get damaged.
Right.
Maybe it's like mustard.
It does make sense. It does make sense either way. The Meiri says that he thinks that I think what you're saying is true. I mean, it makes sense either way. And he thinks that we would lose out by writing Mazikim. Why? Because Mazikim, we might have thought, has a connotation of that you're doing something on purpose. And since Kavanah of the Hazik is not fundamental to all four, that's why it chose this way. It's an interesting to think about. Okay, Rabbi Sam, good job.
Thank you.